Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Shit Talk and Banter podcast. Today's guest is pet behavioralist and trainer Penryn Higgs. She has a clinic in London where she does puppy training classes, and she obviously assesses animals and their behaviours, and you know, helps them out if they have any issues. We had a brilliant conversation. We talked about dogs and cats, and we talked about some other, you know, myths. Like, she was debunking some myths for me as well, about training dogs, or you know, just anything to do with the domestic pets that we have. But yeah, it was definitely a really good conversation, and I really hope you enjoy it. If you haven't already, please go on to Instagram and follow me there. And if you could leave a like, share, and subscribe to this channel, that'd be much appreciated too. Enjoy the episode. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. Today's guest is Penryn Higgs. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks very much. I love the, is that Marilyn Monroe in the background?
It is actually, yes.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was. It looks very very retro, like that. Did you recently watch the Netflix series about her, or the movie?
Gosh, no, I didn't. I just liked the picture.
Well, if you're a big fan of her, I would definitely watch that, because it goes into things that I didn't even know about, and the way she got treated was horrible.
It was
terrible. But we're not on to talk about that, obviously. We're on to talk about what you do. So would you be able to give a short sort of introduction of what you do?
My official title is a companion animal behavior counselor. So basically, I sort out problem cats and dogs on vet referral. I have a degree in psychology, and then I have a postgrad in animal behavior from Southampton. And then I'm a full member of the Association of Pet Behavior Counselors, which is one of the main governing bodies for the profession.
Wow, brilliant. There's quite a few things that I obviously want to touch on today. I suppose we should start off with what you started off there first was, you get the referrals through the vets. So, I mean, do people usually go to the vets first and say, listen, my dog's like playing up, or my cat's playing up, and then if he can't identify, he puts it over to you?
That's how it should work, but actually it's an unregulated profession, and it's also the kind of profession that everybody thinks they can do themselves. So I think quite often what happens is that people first of all ask people in the park, or their neighbours, or just a dog trainer. Now, there's quite a big difference between training and behaviour. So training is what you'd expect to see in a training class. So sit, lie down, touch a paw, or high five or whatever. But behaviour actually goes a bit beyond that. So behaviour deals with problems such as aggression to other dogs, aggression towards people, agoraphobia, fear of being alone, all sorts of other problems. And so when people think, oh, do I need to see a behaviorist or a trainer, sort of think, would I expect to see this problem in a training class? And if it's not, then you should go to a behaviorist, and the vet is the first port of call. It's a bit like going to your GP first of all, and then they refer you to a specialist. So that's how it's supposed to work. But quite often, because people think they can just sort out themselves, it doesn't work like that. And it's an unregulated profession, annoyingly for me. So that I've done a lot of training and have to do regular CPD. But, you know, you could also do a weekend course and call yourself a behaviorist. So it's a bit of a mess currently, which is a bit annoying.
Do you think, sort of going off topic, but do you think that's down to COVID and people like were made redundant and they were kind of figuring out what they wanted to do with their lives? Have you seen, is there like a trend there maybe?
Oh, the problem was way before COVID, but yes, definitely. I think quite, you know, people have been doing lots of soul searching, haven't they? And thinking, oh, I want to work with animals. And then so there are a lot more unregulated people who've cropped up, but they'll die down again when they get bitten and when the problems don't get sorted, and also when they can't claim on their insurance. When you see somebody from the Association of Pet Behaviour Counsellors, you can usually claim back the fees on insurance. So it's always best to ask your vet again, going back to that point.
Yeah. And what kind of made you like do this? I mean, did you grow up around animals, or have you always like had an interest, or what was sort of reasoning that you wanted to do this for your life?
Oh, I've always been kind of obsessed with animals, but I didn't fancy being a vet because that involves, you know, putting them down, cutting them open, and that didn't appeal to me at all. When I was little, you know, when you have sort of those films with sort of little sort of I don't know, cowboys or whatever, fighting the dinosaurs, I'd always be saying, poor dinosaur, practically the first words I could speak. So I knew I had to do something with animals. But then I phoned up, actually, I contacted the Queen's behaviourist just after I'd graduated in psychology. And I said, I want to be a behaviourist. How do I do this? And he said, oh, you have to be a vet. And I thought, oh God, well, I've got no money left now. I've just graduated. I can't retrain to be a vet. So I went into a completely different world, first of all, PR and all that business. And then I read an article about a behaviorist and how they got to be a behaviorist. And it said there was a course at Southampton University. I don't think it exists anymore, but there's one a really good one at Lincoln University, and there's a really good one at Edinburgh as well. And so that's how I first started doing it.
Wow, okay. And so you just always had this connection with, you know, animals. Have you seen them on TV? Like if they were shooting down King Kong off the Empire State Building, you're like, what about King Kong?
Yeah, absolutely. And I still feel that way today.
Yeah. No, I definitely get it. I think there's... It's they're like children. They're so innocent, and obviously they don't have a voice as well. And you know, they need to be protected. They're like kind of like a special, they're special species that need to be protected, I would say.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. And loving them is not enough, though. You have to actually know what you're dealing with. So, which is why when I first started my postgrad in animal behaviour, the first module was on ethology, which is actually, you know, what is a dog? What makes up a dog? What do they need behaviourally? And same with a cat. Because so often people get it wrong. They just think that a dog needs to be cuddled, or a cat is the same as a dog. So quite often, you know, you don't see dogs hugging each other, do you? So actually dogs have to learn to like, to enjoy being cuddled. Some of them sort of enjoy it from an early age, but they don't actually hug each other. So in one of my puppy classes, I tell people to hug their dogs and then feed them a treat, or touch them very gingerly at first and feed them a treat. So they get to the sensation of being hugged and associated with a nice treat, because otherwise you get people who hug and squish their dogs, and the dogs, when they get to an adolescent age and they have the confidence to turn around, they can quite easily turn around and quite often turn around and just bite the person on the nose. And then the person will say to me, my dog's bitten me. This is really shocking. All I've done is just love my dog. Well, okay, we show love in different ways. And similarly with cats, you know, people quite often, before this whole era of working from home, they would get a cat, but actually what they wanted was a dog. And so, because they have to go out to work, and you can't get a dog if you're going out to work a lot. Yeah. And so they treat a cat a bit too much like a dog. And that doesn't work either. So I remember a case where the cat had separation anxiety, and these lovely owners didn't know how to help the cat, and so they tried to sort of tire it out before they went to work, and they got up really early and they spent 2 hours playing with the cat before going to work, and this actually had the opposite effect, because the cat was really getting bonded with their owners, and then when the owners went to work, the cat was just like, well, I don't know how to cope, you know, because the change between the owners being there and not being there was so extreme. And so actually, I joke with them, you need to get a kid, because you're giving your cat far too much attention. What your cat needs to do is just to be let outside in your garden, and allowed to roam a bit more freely be a cat. You know, in cats actually are supposed to roam quite a long way. They're not meant to be shut indoors. So allow the cat to be a cat and allow the person to be a person and go to work. And we just sort of had to extricate the two codependent relationships that had formed to make both people and cat happier.
Yeah. And does that, so with obviously that like behavior that the cat does, where they, you know, they go and they roam far away from home, and they're usually typically by themselves. Like whenever I watch like David Attenborough and like say like a Siberian tiger comes out, he's always by himself. Is that like, I take it that's like stemmed down to them through like genetics?
Yeah, absolutely. Cats are solitary animals. So a vast majority of the cat cases that I see are either what I've just discussed to you, whereas the cat and the human has become too interdependent, or you've got a cat and then they've bought another cat to keep the first cat company, and the two cats hate each other. You know, they secretly hate each other. People say, the owners say to me, oh, the cats love each other. They sleep on the same bed. But then I ask them to send me a photo where I go and see them. And one cat is over here in this corner, sort of pretending that the other cat doesn't exist, looking out the window. And the other cat is the other end of the bed, pretending that that cat doesn't exist, looking at the door. So they might be on the same bed, but they're absolutely hating each other. And so another common error that people have with two cats is that they have one huge litter tray. So these poor cats are forced to even use the same loo have the bowls close together. And again, they hate that kind of thing. Cats really prefer to be solitary animals, usually. So it's very much, when we think about domestic cats, it's very much like a tiger on the tiles. It is pretty much the same. They haven't evolved as much as dogs have.
Yeah. And so what, say like a cat was pregnant, is the best thing to give away the litter, like give away all like the baby kittens, or like do some cats, like are they very like, you know, nurturing to their young?
Well, actually, when cats do prefer to be solitary unless they're related. If they're related, you can keep as many as you like, really, within reason. Cats don't like to live in crowded conditions, but the kind of cats you get on are related generally.
And I bet you hear it whenever people say they hate cats. I mean, how did that come about? Was that something through the media or something? Do you know?
Do they say that? None of my clients say that.
No, but do you know, like a lot of people, whenever you ask them, are you a dog or a cat person? And they're always like, yeah, I'm a dog person. And like, kind of like, I mean, the people that I came around with, like I would say 75% of them would say like, yeah, I'm a dog person instead of a cat. Like, is there a reason why cats are hated on?
I think that's quite a deep question, isn't it? I mean, I think that all dogs are emotional support animals. I really do think people, you know, myself included, who aren't getting the sort of adoration and love that they want, you get it from a dog, don't you? They always look at you and as if they really love you, and they help people to feel really loved and worshipped. And I think the problem happens when people, again, they actually want to be loved and worshipped, but they get a cat and the cat's like, see ya, I just want my food and to go outside. And I think maybe people get disappointed about that. I think that boils down to people wanting cats to be dogs, but they're very different species, and they're just so different. But I don't hear people saying they hate cats very often.
Well, I don't really hear too much. Like, you would obviously know more because you're dealing with them on a daily basis. But whenever I was younger, that was kind of like the consensus, was like everyone was like always a dog person instead of a cat person. But I mean, for me, I was kind of brought up like that. So we had a dog, we never had a cat, but my best friend had a cat, and like, I'm just like, oh yeah, it just does its own thing. But I don't know, for some reason it was ingrained in me that I shouldn't like cats. But then one day I was doing like a marketing job and I knocked on someone's door and they invited me in, and I went inside and talked to them, and they actually had a cat litter there, and the kittens were like only like 12 days old or something, and I started, they were the cutest little things ever, and I just fell in love with cats straight away. I was like, oh my god, I really want one.
Yeah, I think you can be both. But I think you'll have a happy relationship if you know what a dog likes. You know, a dog likes regular walks, lots of company, decent food, not an over-controlling owner, but a relationship, whereas a cat primarily likes access to a garden, some food out all the time so it can come and go and just be a cat. Cats like to have all their resources available to them. They don't like closed doors. They like a cat flap. They don't like to have to wait to use the litter tray if it's a multi-cat household. So they like a 3D universe to live in. So I always tell owners to make their house a bit messier, you know, leave a drawer open that the cat can go into, leave your wardrobe open so the cat can go in and climb up the clothes and clear off some shelves so the cat can jump up because you know, dogs, it's just a surface area in your house that dogs, they don't, you wouldn't want to have your dog jumping up on top of your wardrobe, but that's exactly what a cat might like to do. They like high up spaces and low down spaces. So it's about treating them differently, treating them how they should be, which goes back to my point about ethology. Work out first what a cat is and what a dog is and treat them accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's true. Definitely do your research beforehand. That kind of leads me on to like the dog side of things then. So I always used to get like frustrated whenever I used to take my dog out for a walk and like my dog would have ran up to like another dog, like, you know, just like obviously to greet it and like maybe they smell like the butt. And then I would see like other dog owners like get really like annoyed at that and offended. I'm just like, but that's how they say hello. That's like basically their handshake. But like whenever you see that, does it frustrate you too?
I always say to in my puppy classes, I say, oh, don't get embarrassed if they're sniffing each other's bottoms. That's the doggy equivalent of a human handshake. You're exactly right. I think people just get embarrassed about it. If you prevent your dog from doing that, then it can make them get very frustrated, and then frustration can come out as aggression, and then you've got a problem. Again, it just goes back to understanding our dogs and allowing them to just be dogs, but having a bit of control over it as well. So if you've got a shy puppy and you've got a big rottie that goes up and is sort of sniffing this puppy's bottom and the puppy is not enjoying it or is looking scared, and you can tell that they look scared by maybe their tail goes right under or they sit down so the other dog doesn't have access to their bum. So if you see your dog hassling another dog, it's always polite to just call your dog away. So it's a mixture of both, really. Yes, it's normal, but then watch to make sure that your dog isn't crowding another dog.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, what's your kind of opinion on like, you know, dogs that are being trained, like say like in, this is like completely like way like off on another topic, but still around dogs. So bear with me. But yeah, what's your kind of opinion of like, do you know dogs that are like, they're trained to be like, you know, like canines, like dog sniffers and stuff like that, or like say like they're like police dogs. Like, do you think that's like kind of like animal cruelty? Cause like they're not like having a life like another dog, or do you reckon that that's the purpose that they should have? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I definitely don't think it's animal cruelty. With sniffer dogs, I don't think there's a way of doing it that's cruel, and dogs really enjoy using their nose. I think it's would be an ideal life for a dog to do lots of sniffer work in the day and then you know, sleep on a sofa in a house in the evening. I don't actually know if they're kept in kennels. Don't know. Certainly scent work is a really good thing to be doing with your dog on a daily basis. Helps keep them calm. It's a bit like, you know, when we do yoga, when we sort of breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, it sort of calms a dog down in the same way that does. So it's a very good thing to do with your dog if they're a kind of anxious kind of dog. And you can make them do sniffing by crumbling some crumbs on the floor, dog treats. There's a really good brand. I won't mention the name. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to. Am I allowed to mention the brand?
No, it's okay.
So some crumbs on the floor and just get them to breathe it in and use their nose, and they really enjoy it. Or you can practice hiding treats behind a chair and they sniff it out. And you can tell from the sound when they stop using their eyes and start using their nose, and that's when you know the relaxation is starting. So I don't think it's cruel at all being a sniffer dog. I think it'd be a great life for a dog, really.
Yeah. And what about like the other, like the dogs that get, I was just trying to play devil's advocate there, by the way. What about like, do you know, like a canine dog? So like someone who's like, they're forced to like take down like a bad guy or something, like they're like, you know, to go for the legs or they go for like someone's arm. You always see them like with the big massive pattern and stuff like that. Like, trainers, like,
I think that, again, that's really fun for the dog to learn. And it's fairly easy to train up. And it's terrifying for the, I don't know, burglar or something to, but they're actually, you know, it's actually quite fun for the dog. So how you would train that up is just to start off with playing tuggy, and then you change that so that they're not tugging onto a toy, they're tugging onto a sleeve. And then you would put in once they're doing it and they're enjoying it, you could put it on command. And so that's sort of part way to training up. And then you'd swap it over so it's somebody else. It's not just you, you know, saying the word, I don't know, attack or pull down or whatever the word is. I don't know what the word is. So that you could send off your dog to pull down, let's say. And to a dog, it's just great. It's a game of tuggy. Fantastic. And then you'd recall them back when they finished having that game of tuggy with the burglar's arm.
Okay, cool. No, just want to kind of get, like, obviously, because you're an expert in this, so I want to get your opinion on it. So, like, do you know why, like, there's different dog breeds, and, like, you have to cater to sort of each one. So, like the likes of, like, say, like, you know, like a Cocker Spaniel, like, yeah, like, if you've been told to, like, make sure to get on long walks and stuff like that, or, like, say, like, you have, like, a Staffy, like, it's good to train their jaws, so get, like, sticks to make them, like, you know, get that there, like, sort of tension in their jaws and stuff like that. Like, Is that right what I said actually first?
Well, I don't know about the Staffy one. Certainly, Cocker Spaniels are very active. So they're not a brilliant choice for, you know, somebody who goes to an office every day. But I'm not sure about the Staffy thing. They've got powerful jaws anyway. I wouldn't particularly want to encourage them to make them more powerful. You don't need to mess around with that too much.
So is that just like a myth where, like, you have to like make like some like dog's jaws like do you have to keep them engaged? Is that a myth? Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I just wanted to know that. I don't have a Staffy. I'm not trying to train a dog fighter or anything like that there, so don't be looking at me with those judgy eyes.
I'm just thinking, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I have seen people train their Staffy to hang on to branches.
Yeah.
And I've always been puzzled as to why they're doing that. So I don't know. I hope it's not for dodgy reasons, training them to be fight dogs or something, because Staffies are brilliant dogs. They're so lovely with people. They do need careful socialization with other dogs. And of course, they do have powerful jaws already, and those jaws can do a lot of damage in the wrong hands. So it's important with a Staffy or a Doberman or those big strong breeds, more than anything, that people take them to a responsible trainer. A very good organization is the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, APDT. And it's really important that people train them using kind methods, because if you use methods that aren't kind, then you're creating a sort of ticking time bomb, a very unstable dog. And that's exactly what you don't want with a Doberman or a Staffy. Having said that, I think quite often the dogs with the most, the last time I looked at the numbers, it was a sausage dog was fairly high up on the list of most dog with the most bites. And I think that's because small little non-threatening dogs, people don't bother to train them very well, do they? In fact, I remember going up to somebody in the street and they had a little tiny chihuahua, and I'm one of those mad dog ladies who talks to all the dogs I see in the street. And I went up to this lady and I said, "Can I talk to your dog? Can I stroke your dog?" And she said, "Well, you can. She might bite you. She will bite you, but she hasn't got any teeth left."
No.
And I don't think she'd taken the teeth out, but I think she was just old. Now, the poor dog, you know, of course I didn't. I said, "Oh, I'll admire her from a distance then." Because when a dog is biting, it's 99% because they're scared. So I didn't want to go up to a little tiny dog and scare them. But it's a bit sad that the owner didn't realize that's why her dog was biting people, because she was scared, and or she didn't care. I don't know. Yeah.
There's a brilliant page on Instagram that I'll send to you afterwards of a dog, and it's a dog owner, and obviously it's his dog owner, the dog's not on Instagram, but it's called Nico and it's a Chihuahua, and the guy's from Mexico, he does it, and so they have a lovely relationship. Like, he shows you like everything that they do together. Like, he literally treats it like a little like Barbie doll, and gives it like manicures and all and stuff like that there, and like puts like cucumbers on it, and it looks like really relaxed. But he winds it up sometimes, right, and the reaction is just hilarious. And I don't know if you'll agree with it, but I'll send it to you anyway. You can tell me what your thoughts are on it, but I just think it's really funny.
I think I've seen it. I think because I saw a little clip where the voiceover was saying, "Don't pet me, don't pet me." And there's another one that says, "Pet me." And generally if a dog is growling or barking in an aggressive manner or showing their teeth, I'd say just walk away. They don't want to engage. They're frightened. So many people think though, oh, it's because the dog's being dominant, I need to show my dominance. But actually, that's such a load of rubbish. The dominance myth has been retracted by the person who actually developed it. You know, and actually, dogs are rarely being dominant with their humans. It's more that they're in a situation that they can't actually handle, and the only way that they can tell their owner, actually, I'm not handling this situation, please remove me from this situation, is to first of all sort of early signs of it would be a head turn or a nose lick or body stiffening or the hackles going up on their back. But then if owners, you know, we're not experts in dog body language, so owners tend to just disregard the dog's signals that they're not happy until dogs are forced to do more overt gestures of aggression, such as you know, growling and showing their teeth, and then finally lunging, and then finally actually a warning nip, and then finally a bite. And then what so often happens, with such a shame, is that then the owner whacks them, and so we have an escalation of aggression, an arms race between the owner and the dog, and that never ends well, really, for the dog or the owner. You know, the dog quite often gets put to sleep and the owner feels distraught. Whereas actually, when I go in and see people, the first thing that I do is we try and calm everything down, and we look at what might be causing the dog to be feeling stress in their life. And we remove all those things, make the dog really zen. And then we, if they're worried about something, we reintroduce those things at a very low level, associated with nice things like food or games, until they can cope with the things that they're going to have to cope with in life. So we need to sort of end the arms race between people and dogs. And it's a shame that that dominance theory gains so much traction.
Yeah, and there's with that dominance theory, so I take it that this is a complete myth as well. Like, so I remember people I seen online, like in articles, and I actually did see it on TV as well. People were biting their dog's ears to show that they were dominant. That's weird.
Absolute rubbish. Poor dogs. Gosh.
I know, big dirty mouth coming on your ear. What do you think of, so I've got a couple more questions just to ask you off the top of my head. First one is, Cesar Millan, do you agree with his methods?
No.
Not many people do. What is it?
Well, he fills stadiums, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's crazy because he's so popular, but like a lot of people don't like him because he obviously uses, he like hits the dog basically, doesn't he? He uses that little sort of thing.
Yeah, stupid noises and poking. And it's just the opposite of what you should be doing. It's for the reasons that I've mentioned. I don't agree with his methods. And the thing is, the thing why it catches on is punishment does work. It temporarily. So it's very good for TV shows. So you know, you might get from hitting your dog, you might get the results you want, and you think problem solved. But what they haven't done is they haven't come back with the TV crew, you know, 6 months later to find out that the dog's actually all over the place. Because often with behavior problems, it's a bit like a big game of whack-a-mole. So if you get rid of one problem in a forcible way, then another problem pops up, and you get rid of that problem in a forcible way, and another problem pops up. So it's not really dealing with the animal as a whole. So long-term methods like that rarely work. I mean, I have seen, and I can tell when I see a dog in the street and an owner, I can generally see what kind of relationship they have and whether that dog is truly happy just from the way it holds itself, or from the way it sort of glances up at the owner sort of warily. So you can see what kind of relationship they have. And yes, you might have a perfectly well-behaved dog, but your dog hates your guts, you know, which is not very nice, really, is it? And as I said, it doesn't create a stable dog.
I've got a scenario that I wanted to tell you. So about, I'd say it was like maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we got a shelter dog, and it was a Yorkshire Terrier, and it was quite a big Yorkshire Terrier. And
a big Yorkshire Terrier? Are you sure it was a Yorkshire Terrier?
Well, I think it might have been, yeah, it might have been like a mixed breed, but it was definitely, it has like all the trademark. Like if you looked at it, you'd be like, oh yeah, obviously it's some type of breed of Yorkshire Terrier. But it was quite a big one. And we brought back to the home and all, and everyone's fine. We trained it up, you know, and stuff like that. And but there was like during the early stage, like absolutely lovely dog now. I love him so much. Wee Alfie. But shout out to Alfie if he's watching. But yeah, the very first couple of weeks, he done this weird thing, and we all got freaked out by it. So like, he would have been fine, and then he would have went off, and then we all have been like, "Where's Alfie?" And we went to like see where he was, and he would have been like hiding in the hiding spot. And if we approached him, he started growling and showing his teeth, and we were like, "Whoa, what the fuck? Like, what's going on?" And like, it used to scare us. And then we were like, "So what do we do? Do we just like, do we leave it, or what happens?" So I think we got to the stage where we kind of just let him do it, and then whenever he came back around, he was fine. But like, what do you think that was? Because we did get from a shelter. Like, do you reckon that was probably like he was obviously abused, or what do you reckon?
Well, it's those kind of problems that I see quite a lot of. And my job is a bit like doing a bit of detective work with any kind of scenario that's presented to me. In a case like that, absolutely the right thing to do is to leave a dog alone. He's taken himself away to cope with whatever's happening on his own. So absolutely did the right thing to leave him. But that's a reason, what you described is a situation where I definitely want to make sure that you take the dog to the vet first, to rule out medical causes. And typically with something like that, it would be a full spectrum of tests that we'd need. We might need definitely bloods being tested, stools being tested. It could have been some kind of seizure. So had nothing been found in those, we might have gone down that route. It could also have been simply a really horrible pain in his body that he wasn't coping with. So he wanted to take himself off to cope with this nasty pain. So literally needle in a haystack. But it could also have been, we'd have to look at the environment of what was around him at that time as well. So at the moment, I've just talked about internal reasons for it. But of course, there might be external reasons for it. There could have been a sound, for example, that he could hear that you didn't. Dog's hearing is so much better than humans. Yeah. So there could have been a sound that was scaring him. It could have been actually somebody in your household who was frightening him at that moment, or even an arm gesture. Perhaps if he had been abused or hit by someone previously, an arm movement, a subtle arm movement, can make a dog really, really freak out. But there's a whole host of reasons, but you did the right thing to leave him alone when he was not coping in that way.
Yeah, so it's like kind of just like trigger points for him, really, isn't it? Like kind of like PTSD sort of thing. Dogs can get PTSD, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I don't call it PTSD, but certainly if there's something that's happened to them that's very salient in their lives, especially if it's happened during the socialization period of their lives, which is between around 5 to 15 weeks of age, then that can stay with them for life. So that's why it's really important when you get a dog to go down the gentle types of training rather than the aversive types of training. Otherwise, as I said, it does create that ticking time bomb. And it sounds like your dog was almost like a ticking time bomb, but luckily he coped with it himself by removing himself rather than lashing out at the people around him or the animals or anything else around him.
So sad to think of what happened before, because we got him when he was two. So
yeah, that's is he it. Still alive?
Yeah, yeah, he's still going strong.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And does he still do that then?
No, I don't. Well, so he lives with my sister at the moment and her partner, but no, he is so different. And like, it's mad because I went to Australia and I hadn't seen him for 3 years, and I came back and he just knew me straight away and like came running up to me and like had a video of it, and I just love him so much.
Dogs are brilliant like that. Well, it's good that it's good that he doesn't do that anymore. It shows that it's passed for whatever reason, whether it was medical or whether it was psychological, he's grown out of it.
I think what actually happened, I know we've only just got a couple of minutes left, but I'll just tell you this. I think what happened was his owner was quite elderly and they had died, and Alfie was left in the house until like the proper authorities have found him. So I don't know, like, you obviously don't know what happened with the owner, or maybe like he probably didn't have food for a while and stuff like that there whenever the owner died, which is kind of sad. He's definitely in his forever home now.
Oh yes. Yeah. So there was something in that environment that could have reminded him somehow of that terrible time. Yeah. It sometimes gets awfully, sometimes when you have a problem, a problem dog or a dog with problems rather, it can get very complex. And it's a bit of, sometimes with my plans, we have to tweak them quite a lot. That's not working. Let's try this. This is not working. Let's try that. So it never gets boring.
Well, listen, Penaran, thank you very much. I know we're running out of time here. Where can people find you? Are you on Instagram? I know you have a Facebook, you have a website. Are you on Instagram or anything like that?
I am, Pet Shrink London.
Okay.
And my website is petshrink.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for doing this.
You're welcome. Thank you.